You're listening to Calling All Pets from Wisconsin Public Radio. Hello, I'm Larry Mueller, here with Public Radio's favorite zoologist, Patricia McConnell, and we're here to bring out the best in your pet. So, if you need help understanding your animal's behavior, give us a call now. Here's the number, 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. In addition to the calls this hour, we'll also wrap up our three-week For the Love of a Dog topic series based on Patricia's new book on understanding your emotions and your pet's emotions. And Tricia, throughout this series, we've come to learn that pets are not only experiencing emotions, but they also express emotions, much like we do. What have you got for us this week?
Well, now that we've briefly talked anyway about emotions like happiness and sadness, anger and jealousy, we're going to take an in-depth look at one emotion in particular, the emotion of love, and why we love our dogs so much.
Love. That sounds lovely, Patricia.
Welcome.
And we'll also talk with the best-selling author, John Katz, about his lifetime dog named Orson. And maybe we'll even find out what a lifetime dog is. We hope so anyway. But that's still to come. Right now, we have some callers waiting to talk with us, and here's our first caller. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. Who are we speaking with?
This is John.
And John, where are you from?
Tallahassee, Florida.
And what can we do for you?
Well, my girlfriend has this cat that is extremely vocal. I mean, if you can imagine, if Placido Domingo and Gilbert Gottfried had a love child and it was a cat.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, maybe you could make some money off this thing.
Not with a voice like Gilbert Gottfried, no. No. And he won't shut up. And that's kind of the problem. In the morning, we always know that he wants food, and he will start meowing and just won't shut up. But there are other times when he'll just sit and meow, and it's very loud and it's very obnoxious. And since we don't speak cat, we don't know what he's really after. And we were hoping that maybe you could suggest some kind of behavior modification or something that would help us address this issue.
Besides duct tape?
Yeah.
That has been considered, but she just won't stand for that.
Let me ask you a question. What do you think he wants when he's meowing at you?
I suspect he wants attention. He's very greedy for attention.
Has he been reinforced intermittently, which would be very easy to do, and which just happens to be the best way to reinforce a behavior? So sometimes when he meows, he gets attention, and sometimes he doesn't?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, well, come clean, John. You're
but you know, it's really hard for that not to happen. It's
sure.
Very, very difficult. So your job is going to be to train yourself for a while, and it's not
to give him attention when he yells.
Not going to be easy. I would actually suggest, and I think people who listen to the show a lot know that I don't often suggest corrections. But, you know, sometimes I think you really need to do that. You need to do it humanely.
Sure.
And as best you can without any anger associated with it, which is the challenge part here.
Sure.
But here are the guidelines that I would try. One, I would try as hard as you possibly can to consciously, when he starts to meow, to turn away from him.
Okay.
That's if that's the only thing you can do. Sort of the only tool you have at the moment in your toolbox is to just ignore him. Do everything you can. However, to give
May
him...
May I interrupt with a question?
Of course.
Do you have a behavior modification program for my girlfriend?
Yes. And this is where positive reinforcement...
Because she's a very soft touch where anything with fur is concerned.
Is she?
Yes, very soft touch, yes.
Well, grow a little more yourself. You know, and tell her to pet you. Give her, you know, I talk about incompatible behavior. So if she wants to be attending to the cat, I want you to reinforce her every time she pets you when the cat meows. You're going to make her glad that she did. So this is the other challenge, but see if that will help any. And increased exercise never hurts. So try and exhaust him so he's, you know, he can't cry when he's sleeping. So try that.
Give those things a try, John, and thanks very much for calling. You know, John's cat isn't too choosy when it comes to finding things to whine about, but many listeners often contact us because their cats won't stop begging for food, if you'll remember the many times, Patricia.
Oh, yeah.
We heard from Joyce in Fayetteville, Arkansas, who wanted to tell us how she prevented this habit from ever starting with her new cat, and here's what she said. in her words here. We have a young female cat that we got from an animal shelter. Before she came home, we designated the laundry room as her room. It's downstairs, and she stays there overnight. All her food or water and litter are available to her in this room. And we've made it a practice to never give her food while she's upstairs where we live. Seems to work so far to eliminate begging, and she has very little interest in counters and tabletops as well. What do you think of that?
I think those are great ideas. I think if from the very beginning you can establish a situation in which the animal is conditioned to never expect food in a particular location, and locations are really important. They are for us too.
Sure.
If you think about it. It's a wonderful way of establishing the correct habit. Now, I will say that for some people, me included, I want my cat sleeping with me. You know, some of us like to cuddle with our cats at night. So that's perfectly fine if that's what you want to do, but you don't want to be giving your cats treats necessarily when you're lying in bed in the middle of the night. So generally it's a great idea, and I think starting off right is the key to a lot of great relationships in cats and
people.
As
that's
well.
Right. And if someone would like to send us a pet tip, how could they do that?
Oh, we love it when people send us emails. Just send it to pets@wpr.org.
And if you'd like to join in with a question here online, give us a call at 1-800-462-7413, and let's take another call. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hello.
Hello, who are we speaking with?
Jennifer.
Jennifer, where are you from?
Lakeview, New York.
Well, it's a pleasure to speak with you, and what is on your mind?
Well, I have a toy poodle, and she's 12 years old, and she has a very nasty behavior that started about 4 years ago when we moved into our new house. She goes after my husband and literally bites him when he gets ready to go to work, and it's actually to a laundry room door. I don't know if she smelled like oils from the plant where he works at or what it is, but she goes after him so hard that, I mean, she bites him, and we've tried squirting her with a squirt gun. We have to put a muzzle on her. We've put her in another room and with the door closed, and she just is so vicious.
And what does she do when he comes back?
Well, she's in bed sleeping when he comes home at night because he works third shift. So she's sometimes territorial on her bed. Like, she has a bed right next to ours.
Mm-hmm.
She'll depend on if she's really awake. She's become hard of hearing in the last year.
Yeah.
But she can see fairly well. I mean, we believe she doesn't have too bad of cataracts at this point.
But so if she's aware that your husband's coming into the room, is she aggressive to him then?
No, not normally, no.
That's really interesting. Hmm. It has to do, it sounds like, with not him, but with his leaving the house.
Because even when he's home, like, for instance, if he's laid off from work or he's home on a vacation or something like that, the same time every day she gets aggressive. The minute he goes towards that door, say maybe the third day, mm-hmm. say if he's still off of work, she will still go after him to bite him. And he's literally had to put his steel-toe boot up.
Yeah, this sounds really serious.
This is bad.
No, I get it. This is really serious.
Yeah.
And so the first thing I want to say is, because it's so serious, is the best thing you can do is find a local animal behaviorist, a board-certified veterinarian in behavior, or a really great dog trainer who can be your coach and work you through this. I'll give you some general ideas, though. So, you know, the first step is first cause no harm, right, and prevent the problem until you can get it sorted out. So the first thing I would do is, what's good about this is predictable. You know when it's going to happen.
Right.
So you're absolutely right to have the dog in another room. What I would do is when your husband's, say, 20 minutes before he's about to leave for work, and figure out what the cue is. You know, figure out when she starts becoming aroused. And it well might be when he goes in the bathroom and brushes his teeth or combs his hair or something, or goes into the closet and puts on his work clothes. So be a good observer. Be Jane Goodall and figure out, when does she start her behavior changing, even in very subtle ways? And before that happens, take her into another room, and I want you to take her in there with lots of great treats. Don't give her lots of treats for the rest of the day. She's 12 years old. She doesn't need a treat for going potty anymore.
Okay.
So cut the treats out except for this. And so what I want you to do is I want you to actively work. Don't just sit in this room doing something else. While your husband is leaving, going through that process, you'll hear it. She'll hear it too. I want you to teach her that every time she turns an orient towards the sounds your husband is making, I want you to click or smooch, get her to turn around and look at you, and then give her a treat for it. And ask her to sit, ask her to lie down. I want you to give her other things to do and give her lots of treats for it. I want you to start teaching her an incompatible behavior.
Okay.
And probably some additional help from a certified trainer.
That'd be a good idea.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Jen. 1-800-462-7413, our number. And here's another caller. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Just great. Who are we speaking with?
This is Jerry.
Jerry, where are you from?
I'm in South Georgia.
South Georgia. Well, what can we do for you?
Well, I'm trying to integrate a stray dog that showed up while we're building a house and trying to integrate him into a multi-pet house. At this point, the only thing that seems really possible would be to allow him to remain outdoors a lot. And a kind of a classic farm dog.
Okay.
But I want to have a reasonable amount of control and obedience with him, even though he's not a house dog.
So what's he like right now? Does he interact with you freely, or is he shy? What's he like now?
He's got a great personality. He's probably a year old. He's got no fear. He's affectionate. He's intelligent. He's kind of blended right in with my girlfriend and I, but we're bringing other pets in now as the house is 95% completed. And stage one is a 6-pound chihuahua and a 10-year-old golden retriever.
Okay. And has he interacted with those dogs yet?
Yes, he has, and it went perfectly. And we'll bring him in the house sometimes all night, and he sleeps and he enjoys them. He tries to play with them.
Good. And they enjoy him?
They do. The problem is that the golden, starting to get some arthritis, and the chihuahua is made out of glass, I think.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Little.
Flop, who was the stray dog, he had a 120-pound Great Dane to play with for a few months while the general contractor was here.
He's boisterous.
He is, and he's not averse to grabbing a hind leg.
He plays a little rough for the dogs that you've got.
He plays a little rough, so we can't leave him unsupervised with the dog.
And good for you. Don't do that. Absolutely keep them separate when you're gone. You need to protect your resident dogs. And some of these young dogs, dogs just vary in their play styles a lot. And some dogs play pretty rough, and some dogs are pretty bitey. So you're absolutely right to always be there to supervise it. And one thing you might want to try is yelping as if you were another puppy who was being injured. That's part of how puppies learn to regulate their play, is they get feedback from other puppies. Ow, you hurt me. I don't want to play with you anymore. So sometimes it works if when they're playing, if you see something that's a little bit too rough, maybe a nip to a back leg, you go, up or ouch. It has what's called an instant onset offset. So it just comes out really, really fast and then is over really, really fast. And that creates a wall of sound that is the most likely sound to stop Flop. I love that name, by the way. Get his attention, and then you can just ask him to come to you, ask him to sit, and then let him go back and play. And basically, you're going to be helping him learn to regulate his play.
You're going to flip it. So it'll be a flip for Flop.
Oh, jeez, Miller. I still love you, Larry.
So give that a try. Yeah. Thanks very much for calling.
Good luck with Flop.
Let's flip Flop. 1-800-462-7413, the number to call. Coming up next, Tricia explains why the heck we love our dogs so much. The explanation may not be as simple as you think, I'm here to tell you. I'm Larry Miller with Patricia McConnell, and you're listening to Calling All Pets from Wisconsin Public Radio.
The Calling All Pets website offers you the opportunity to submit email questions, browse pet tips, and find out when Patricia will be in a city near you. Information online at callingallpets.org. That's callingallpets.org. Pet books and training guides are also available through the radio store at 800-747-7444.
I'm Larry Miller here with Public Radio's favorite zoologist, Patricia McConnell, and this is Calling All Pets from Wisconsin Public Radio. This week, we conclude our 3-week topic series based on Patricia's new book, For the Love of a Dog, Understanding Emotion in You and Your Best Friend. And so far, we've learned about how our emotions compare to those of our dogs. And this week, we're taking a look at a specific emotion,
the emotion of love.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, we all love our dogs, at least most of us do most of the time. But why do we love our dogs so much? You know, during the Hurricane Katrina disaster, we know that 60% of the people who refused to evacuate said it was because they wouldn't leave their pet behind. That's amazing.
Amazing.
That's a biological phenomena, and it deserves attention. It deserves, I think, more attention from biologists, from psychologists, and from public health experts.
Well, you know, many people love their dogs because they get unconditional love in return.
And that, you know, that's the standard traditional answer, and I think there's great truth to it. But I don't think it's enough. I don't think it's enough to explain the extent of our loves for dogs. And I also, I'm not sure dogs always give us unconditional love all the time, every single second. You know, can they really adore us every single moment of the day? Maybe it's because they can't talk. You know, if they're a little irritated at us, we don't necessarily know it.
You are breaking my heart. I want them to love me all the time. Darn it.
And I do, too. Larry, I love you all of the time. But, you know, psychologists say that we're all of us, we want that feeling of unconditional love. You know, it's really a very important part of being a truly happy person. And I think the fact that dogs are so joyful most of the time and that they can't talk when they're not, I think that helps us feel like, you know, we really are loved just profoundly by our dogs. So that's one aspect of why we love dogs so much. But there's a second one, which is that dogs elicit from us the kind of love that we give to our children. So we feel like they love us, but they elicit from us the kind of nurturance and love that we give our own, you know, our own young.
Yeah, yeah. I've noticed that. Why is that?
We know from a lot of research that we have innate responses to helpless baby mammals. You know, psychologists call it the awe phenomenon. And dogs, like human babies, are nonverbal. They're helpless. And we respond by that physiologically. There's a hormone called oxytocin. It's the hormone of social attachment. And dogs bring that out in us. And that's the hormone associated with love.
So while we feel unconditional love from our dogs, we instinctually give them the kind of love and nurture that we give our own infants.
That's right. And added on to that, as I was saying earlier, when they're just perhaps a little irritated that we put the leash down and answered the phone and delayed their walk, they can't talk. So even if, you know, they do think we're having a bad hair day, they can't say so.
You know, bad hair days are what got me into radio.
Larry, your hair. Larry's hair is just fine.
Well, it looks like we have some callers waiting online. This is a good time to get back to those calls. 1-800-462-7413. Maybe we should see if they're having a bad hair day, too. No,
we can't help if they are. That's the problem.
Let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hello, this is Richard from Stuart, Florida. How are you?
Well, just great, Richard. Thank you so much for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, we have two Jack Russell Terriers. We have one that is 4 years old. Her name is Willow. And another female that is 11 months old. And lately, they have been so aggressive towards each other, and I think it's the little one that is generating the aggression, and the older one attacks her viciously. So right now, we are living in two households.
Oh,
we
dear.
We live in separate rooms. We do everything separately with them, and it's something that we really want to fix to get back to one family unit.
So how long has this been going on?
Been going on for about 3 months now.
Oh, dear. Boy. And I'm sure this, I'm guessing, but the probability, I shouldn't say I'm sure, the probability is very high that this relates to competition between same-sex individuals. And regrettably, one of the things that people in this business know is that some of the hardest problems to solve are when two females take it upon themselves to not get along, and some of the most injurious serious fights are between two females of the same household. So it sounds like this started when your young puppy started leaving puppyhood and going into adolescence, which is exactly when an older female would start to feel like she's a challenge. The bad news, that I hesitate to say, but I need to, is that it is possible that you might not be able to fix this. And I hate to say that because that's what I am. I'm a fixer. Mm-hmm. That's my job. But I need to tell you that serious aggression between two female dogs, and terriers are well known for being fighters sometimes, dog-dog aggression, can be one of the hardest things for behaviorists like me to try and turn around. So this is a case where I would definitely link up with a professional, because you obviously, this is a really serious problem. You're very good to keep them apart right now. The idea would be to make sure they're both spayed. That would be one thing. That's not going to be a magic cure, but that would be very important. And then to gradually reintroduce them such that they had already gotten a lot of training individually, so that they were very good on the particular cues, like watch, turn around and look at my face, lie down and stay, go get the toy. So you have a lot of alternatives. So when one of them gives a hard eye, sort of a nasty, dirty look to the other one, you can instantly stop it and give her an incompatible behavior. And sometimes you can turn things around.
But it's a hard slog.
It's a tricky one. And so I wish I could be more optimistic. It's very possible you can turn this around, but I would be very cautious, very conservative, and I would definitely link up with a professional.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Richard. Appreciate it.
We will cross all of our paws.
Yes, we sure will. Thank you again. 1-800-462-7413, our number to call. And here's another caller. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, this is Kathy from Chicago, Illinois.
Hi, Kathy. Thanks for calling.
Hi there.
What can we do for you?
I have a cat that, I have two cats, and Clyde is a sprayer. And we have, over the months, and probably about 2 years off and on, cleaned up, washed, alcohol swabbed, and then we purchased the flyaway, and that seems to be helping, but there is an occasional time where he still does spray. He finds another spot to spray, or he'll spray if we have company and he sprays in their bathroom. And
and
I've just noticed, and I talked to my husband this morning, I'm wondering if part of it also is his access to scents from the outside, because we've had our doors closed for about 2 weeks. And he hasn't sprayed.
Very common. It's
really
a good observation on your part. That's a very good observation. I've had clients whose cat sprayed when the owners came back, having walked somewhere where there was the scent of other cats.
Okay.
And I'm particularly buoyed by the fact that it sounds like things are better. So when you say better, are they, if worst was 100%, is it down to like 10% or...
I would say 10-20%, yeah.
Okay.
So it is a lot better than it was, and, you know, it was a couple times a week, and I'm hoping it's in our rearview mirror.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
But so now when it's in your side mirror, is it like once a month?
It's been about 2 weeks, and he sprayed a curtain that I had dry cleaned and rehung, and
new scent.
New scent. Okay.
If it's related to company, now it's a little extreme to ask your
guest
to spray
away
their shoes. Well, just their shoes.
Yeah, under the arms.
Larry's doing an entire grooming procedure. Yeah, that would be...
A little hairspray.
You could do that with guests you don't really want to come back.
We'll have an outdoor shower put in.
There you go. Like a whole sort of, bioterror kind of
the radiation.
Right. This will keep those guests coming back, right?
Well, neighbors to talk, so.
Right. Yeah, that'll be good. But you could also, a lot of people ask people to take their shoes off. So that's another possibility. Also, one option that is worth considering, given that you've tried doing all kinds of other things, obviously they're helping, but one remote correction in which is tricky, which means basically you have to be detective and shadow your cat such that your cat doesn't know you're following him, which can get a little tricky. But sort of keep one eye open and be ready with like an empty pop can with coins in it or something like that, that you're just going to wait until he turns around and lifts that tail up, and then don't say anything. We don't want it associated with you, but you're going to do something that doesn't hurt or terrify your cat, but startles him enough that it's like, ooh, I'm not going to do that again.
Okay.
So
okay.
That's something else to think about.
Kathy, I can see you crawling around on your hands and knees.
After she gets out of the radioactive shower protection.
with my black turtleneck and black hat.
Aren't you glad you called?
That sounds like a possibility, though, because sometimes, you know, I've been clicking away on my keyboard upstairs, and I can see him winding up to do that.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay.
All right.
Yeah, give it a try.
Give it a shot, and thank you so much for calling. 1-800-462-7413, our number. Coming up next, we'll talk with author John Katz about the unpredictable border collie who changed his life. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, and this is Calling All Pets.
The Calling All Pets website offers online archives of the show, pet tips contributed by other listeners, and a complete list of guests featured on the program. Our website is callingallpets.org. That's callingallpets.org. Also, the radio store provides a selection of books and training guides featuring advice to deal with multi-dog households and leaving pets home alone. Information and ordering at 800-747-7444.
Welcome back to Calling All Pets. I'm Larry Mueller with Public Radio's favorite zoologist, Patricia McConnell. And this week, we welcome John Katz to the program. John is the author of several books, and his latest is called A Good Dog, The Story of Orson Who Changed My Life. John Katz, welcome to the program.
Welcome. It's a great pleasure for me to be here.
Much of your book is about how your dog Orson got into all kinds of trouble. So why did you decide to name this book A Good Dog?
Well, I think I think the idea of dogs being good or bad is always troublesome because, you know, it's dogs don't make these moral choices, but a good dog in the sense that he was very loving and that he did a lot for me and taught me a lot and forced me to learn a lot. And whatever problems he had were, of course, not of his making.
Yeah. Maybe you could describe some of the trouble that Orson got into.
He loved to chase everything but sheep. He loved to chase buses. He loved to chase kids on skateboards, little dogs, anything really but sheep. He just did not care to herd them. And this is, you know, this is as I learned, as I came to learn, you know, the challenge here was to figure out what was appropriate, how to communicate with him, how to be clear, how to read his behavior. And you know, what he did was he triggered a process in order to keep him and keep my marriage and keep my neighborhood intact. I just started learning, trying to learn and beginning to learn. And that was a great journey for me. It just led to a lot of things. I began writing about dogs, not from a training perspective, obviously, but from the perspective of the emotional geography that exists between people and dogs, which, as you all know, is getting very intense these days.
Yeah.
It is. And, you know, you write about that emotional connection that you had with Orson so beautifully. A lot of the listeners of the show know that I had a dog that I call my forever dog, Cool Hand Luke, and you talk about Orson as being your lifetime dog. Would you talk about what you meant by that?
Yes. I'm really intrigued. As I go around the country in readings and all, I always say to people, do you have a lifetime dog? And I'm always amazed that everybody knows what I mean.
Yeah.
I read about Luke, and you wrote very powerfully about him, and he was clearly a dog like Orson that entered your life at a particular point and defined it. And it could be at a point relating to work or relating to family or relating to a change or whatever transition. People remember a lifetime dog and because it kind of marked a very important period for them. Now, I don't know whether you can have more than one. Orson was certainly a dog like that for me in that he led me to quite a few things. It's really remarkable how much the dog changed my life and how unprepared I was for that.
Yeah, and he had an interesting personality. How would you compare Orson's personality to your own?
Well, that's a loaded question. You know, I write a lot about attachment theory, about why we love the dogs we love and as opposed to other dogs, and why we often love the dogs that cause us the most trouble. In this case, I really identified with this dog. I saw him as a kind of earlier version of me and often misinterpreting what he was doing. He was, you know, I saw him as being rebellious and devious and difficult and willful and all the things we attribute to dogs that is often not true. They're things that we do and we project onto them. I couldn't be impatient. I couldn't be frustrated. I couldn't get angry. I had to just curb all this stuff. And I didn't want him to suffer from my problems. So it was an interesting parallel track that kind of forced me to be better. And as I improved, he improved to a certain extent.
Yeah, and I bet being that you saw so much of yourself in Orson, it must have been difficult. Or was it all the more difficult to discipline him when he misbehaved?
It was very difficult to discipline him until I learned to interpret his behavior correctly. So as I began to calm down and be clearer and learn to read his behavior and learn to pay attention to where his eyes were and his ears were and his tail was, he did better, and I did better. We ended up sheepherding in one of our many efforts to deal with the dog, and that led me to getting a farm. And I have another dog, Rose, a border collie, who was as comfortable in that role as Orson was not. Had no unfortunate previous history, came as a puppy, spent every day of her life really with sheep and donkeys and doing chores and working with me. It was great, great pleasure in my dog life. This a bit crowded Orson off to the side a bit because, you know, he could never quite get organized enough to figure out how to sheep herd. He was too old, I think, and I didn't quite know how to do it. And then there are all these other animals that need care and need attention. And need veterinary care and need, to be cared for. I was one day tallying up what I had spent on, you know, behaviorists and trainers and acupuncturists. And I just said, you know, wait a minute. We live with people. We have to deal with our own humanity. We have to deal with our own humility. We have to understand what the limits are. I think, as you probably know better than I, there's a strong instinct in the dog culture for the guru who can tell you everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And gurus can become very popular by coming up with very easy answers. Say, I can fix anything if you just do this, this, and this.
Right.
And people really want to believe that because they love their dog so much. That's what they want. And as you know, it's just much more complicated than
that's
that.
I mean, right.
Sometimes you can, and often you can, and sometimes you can't. And in this case, I think I ran into the limits of what I felt could be done and yeah. was appropriate to do.
And I know you felt that at one point this unpredictable behavior might have indicated a medical problem, and you wound up entering what you called the woo-woo, I think it was the word, the term that you used. What's the woo-woo?
It's a technical description, right, John?
Right. That's right. Well, I've always been, you know, I like vets, you know, and I like trainers, and I've been I've done very well with them. You know, I think vets are very serious and they're very well informed, and they don't obviously have all the answers always, but I think it's the best shot for lay people like me. And the vet said, look, when he started hurting people, he started losing it. He said, you know, I'm sort of out of conventional practices, but there is a holistic practitioner in Vermont who has had good luck with acupuncture and other things, and you should really try it. And it was a sort of a last ditch thing in my mind, and I was very wary about it. And I did sort of go down a slope that I'm just not entirely comfortable with. The acupuncture was very good. It was very impressive. The dog really calmed down quite a bit. He liked it. She did do Chinese calming herbs, which I was less convinced about.
Mm-hmm.
And then we ended up with an animal communicator, a shaman, who was very perceptive and very interesting, I must say, in all fairness, who had gifts that I don't have, and was very intelligent and impressive. But even there, I was already into territory that I was getting uncomfortable with. Not that none of it worked or that it was inappropriate, but I was sort of feeling, you know, I called it into the woo-woo, which is where I was suddenly, there were boxes of herbs and calming potions piling up and acupuncture appointments, and then the communicator coming and having journeys across time and space. And that's when I started feeling, you know what, this isn't that this is all bad or not good or not sometimes good for people, but I think I'm not really comfortable with how far I'm going.
And so you ultimately were left with a very difficult decision to make with a dog who had been severely aggressive. There was one very serious bite. And so you had a very tough choice to make, right?
I did have a tough choice. It was three people that he hurt, And I detailed, you know, the choices and what I felt my choices were. There was a child who was nipped, not too seriously. There was a young woman who was bit more severely, and then a neighbor who was bit quite severely. There'd been a lot of construction going on at the farm, may have contributed to that. There was a suggestion among the vet that there was a medical problem, something like a thyroid or a tumor. It might be possibly contributing to this, although they weren't sure. And I just I feel strongly about this issue of dogs hurting people. It's not that they're bad or that they mean any harm, obviously. But at the same time, it's a huge problem that some people in the dog world don't really like to deal with very much. And once I knew he could do that, once I knew he was capable of that, I had was haunted by the idea of some kid getting the face chewed up, and I could have stopped it. It's not compatible with my life with dogs. I know it's somewhat of a controversial thing because there is this article of faith that you must always keep faith no matter what and never quit. And I certainly subscribed to that for the longest time. But I felt in the final analysis, I did not want a dog who was a prisoner. I did not want a jail dog who could never interact with people. I think the dog would not have liked that. I would not have liked that. And I had certainly exhausted, I think, every appropriate training option and behavioral option that was available to me. So I felt, that's where I ended up. I really felt that of all the options, he really, had to be put down. And it was a tough decision, although it was not a difficult decision, and I felt now that it was the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly a sad decision.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been able to go on from that and live the life with dogs that I know you practice and preach and that I believe in, which is dogs that are trained, that behave appropriately, that can be trusted, that are understood, that are trained clearly. And that, to me, is the life of dogs that I want. And I think a dog that's going to be, that I know is going to hurt people and have to watch over every second of every day, is not the life that I want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you write very compellingly about this choice you made, and it's very compelling reading. I would love to hear you talk about the dogs you have now at Bedlam Farm.
Thank you. Well, the things that take an interesting... Orson is the gift that keeps on giving, and of course, they're making a movie about him.
Are they really?
Of a dog year.
And I love
it. The first book, and Jeff Bridges is playing John Katz, believe it or not, and was here all summer trooping around in my clothes with six Hollywood Border Collies running around my barns. Much better behaved than mine. And that's been completed. That's going to be released next summer. But my life with dogs is great. I have two labs, Pearl and Clementine, who are wonderful dogs from Vermont and are just they love being on a farm, as you can imagine, and eat disgusting things, which move through them quickly. All good labs do. Their favorite spot is behind the cows and behind the donkeys. And I have three Border Collies at the moment. I keep thinking one of them is going somewhere, but everybody who knows me thinks that she's not. These were two. There's Rose, of course, who I wrote about at Bedlam Farm, who is my hero, who's the working, runs the farm, manages it, moves everybody around, keeps order, covers my back, and puts up with my many stupid moves. And then there's two dogs that I just recently got off of a farm where they had been, these New York people from New York bought a farm, fixed it up, bought two New Zealand Border Collies, and flew them in from New Zealand, and then never came back to the farm.
Oh, no.
Nobody knew these dogs were there. I didn't know these dogs were there. And so they're just beautiful dogs, amazing dogs, Izzy and Emma. And so, of course, I took them just to stabilize them and get homes for them. And, of course, they're here. And there is some skepticism as to whether they will be leaving.
But I'm sure we'll be reading about them soon.
Absolutely.
I hope so.
And next book, Dog Did.
John, thank you so much.
Thank you. This was great. A great privilege for me.
Thank you very much. John Katz is the author of A Good Dog, The Story of Orson Who Changed My Life. He joined us today from New York. And stay tuned. We have another trivia question coming your way with your chance to win a copy of John Katz's book, A Good Dog. And we'll also take more of your calls. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, and this is Calling All Pets.
The Calling All Pets website offers you the opportunity to submit email questions, browse pet tips, and find out when Patricia will be in a city near you. Information online at callingallpets.org. That's callingallpets.org. Pet books and training guides are also available through the radio store at 800-747-7444.
This is Calling All Pets from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, along with Public Radio's favorite zoologist, Patricia McConnell. And before we go back to the phones, it's time for our animal trivia question of the week. And last week's question was, how many years must a tiger cub live with its mother before it's ready to live on its own? And Patricia, what's the correct answer?
The answer is a tiger cub must live with its mother for up to 2 years before it's ready to survive on its own. Wild tigers, by the way, can live to be 15, theoretically.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, only about half of wild tiger cubs actually live long enough to be adults at all. So many threats to them. Poaching, loss of prey, loss of habitat, all of those things continue to threaten this endangered species.
That's too bad. We do want to congratulate last week's winner.
On a happier note.
Yes, and now we have another chance for you to win this week's contest and receive a copy of John Katz's book, A Good Dog. All correct answers to this week's question will have their names pulled together, and two winners will be selected at random, and I'll sign at least my copy of it. And here's today's question. When Tricia says, come by, to her border collie, what does she want her dog to do? Come by. If you know the answer to the question, give us a call at 1-800-462-7413. Tell us your answer. That's 1-800-462-7413. And be sure to check our website in about a week for the answer to this week's question. That's at callingallpets.org. And if you'd like to join us, the number to call is 1-800-462-7413. And let's take a call. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, this is Jeannie from Tequesta, Florida.
Hi, Jeannie. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you. We've used a lot of your hints, especially the one about the peanut butter rubber Kong. But we have two major issues with our 95-pound wuss named Bingo. He is not like the black lab the man just talked about. the major issue is that he goes absolutely berserk any type of mail delivery truck comes up. He has even broken out a window.
Ooh.
It started with a delivery man leaving a package, and he must have done something deliberately to scare the dog because he had sprayed fecal matter all over the furniture near the window.
Ooh.
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 And I saw the man walk down the sidewalk, go back up to the window toward the dog, and then when he saw me pulling in, he left.
Oh, that does bode poorly.
Yes.
Yes.
There are a lot of people whose dogs go crazy when delivery people come. And it's sort of a setup because this person comes in to the territory, violates a territorial boundary, does not go through a greeting ritual, and then leaves as the dog is barking. So when the dog, in their perception, as best we can tell, what they get is that this really is an intruder, because they didn't go through a greeting ritual. I mean, how would you feel if somebody burst into your house and then did, you know, picked up your lamp and moved it to a different table, never said a word to you, you know, and you said, hello, who are you? And they didn't look at you. They just moved the lamp to a third table and then left. I mean, you'd be like, what the heck? This is an intruder. And I should protect against this person. And then say this lamp mover, you said, get out of here. And they did. You'd be like, okay, that worked. So the next time they came, before they moved the lamp to the third table, you'd say, get out of here, right? So dogs learn to get aggressive. So my guess is that that's happening as well as a possibility of some kind of a trauma that well could have had an effect and made this worse. So here are a couple of things you can do. One is I want you to prevent the dog's access to the window. So if you have, for example, a couch that the dog can jump up on and bark out the window, or if you have windows by the door, I want you to block those off. You need to move the couch. And I know this is not always the easiest fix, but it's really important. You could also just not allow the dog access to that particular room, because you've got to break this habit. And if it happens when you're gone, say you work on it when you're home on the weekend, but then Monday through Friday you're gone, and then Monday through Friday the dog barks like crazy, it's like, I'm smoking from Monday through Friday, but I'm not going to smoke on the weekends. Well, that's not going to help you stop smoking, right?
No.
So you need to prevent this reaction. And then when you're home, you need to teach a new reaction. Put the dog on a leash, stand well back from the window or somewhere where he can see this delivery person. Give him a treat every time as this person is walking up. Ask him to do a different couple things. Sit, down, stay, come to me. Basically, keep his arousal level down by decreasing the intensity of the stimuli, by decreasing visual, by keeping him back farther away, and then give him other things to do. Mm-hmm. Does that all make sense?
I hope so. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Patricia, we heard from a listener named Beth who listens to Calling All Pets on WUKY in Lexington, Kentucky, and she has a question, not about a pet, but rather about some squirrels that seem to be upset with her, and she writes the following. Our house is covered in redwood siding, and last spring, squirrels chewed or dug a hole in the siding that covers our chimney and took residence inside of it. We let them know they weren't welcome by putting a radio in the hearth and blasting it on obnoxious AM radio stations.
Oh, who is that a punishment for, you or the squirrel?
Well, it worked. However, this fall, the squirrels came back. We again blasted away with the radio. Well, they are no longer in the chimney. However, they started chewing and digging all over the siding of the chimney. Are they angry with me? How can I make them go away?
Oh, they're not angry. If they were angry, they would go away. I think they're thrilled with you because you created this potential squirrel nesting facility for them. You know, the perfect squirrel condo. So there are a couple things you can do. There's certainly wildlife experts, sort of pest control experts, who can help you out. And sometimes that's actually the best thing to do. But if the rock music or whatever the music is isn't working, I mean, you can try a different kind of sound. Sometimes there are sounds that can repel wild animals, although in my experience, usually the animals habituate pretty fast. There's actually some research on this, but the people don't, so you're going to punish yourself more than anything else. There's some potential screening you could think about.
Barriers, sure.
Barriers. There are some silhouettes of predators that you could put up there. Larry, I know that you deal with this topic on your other radio show. Do you have any other ideas?
Well, the one that seems to work the best, it may be a combination of things. It's never usually one thing that works. So if you put a silhouette up there and you add some hardware cloth around the area that's affected, sometimes that's enough to get rid of them. And sometimes they just move to another area, too. And in that case, then I usually suggest animal control as a way to deal with it.
Or another area could be your neighbor's house. You could just sort of lure them over to those neighbors that you haven't gotten along with so well. You know, possibly a little trail of nuts over to your neighbor's house. But it does sound like those ideas maybe in combo might be your, not easy fixes, there's no way around it. They're very intelligent. Trying to battle wits with a squirrel turns out to be a humbling experience for most of us humans. But try those things and good luck.
Good luck. Thank you. And again, to email us, what's the email address?
Oh, it's easy. Just send us an email to pets@wpr.org.
And if you'd like to call us, the number is 1-800-462-7413. And come to think of that, let's take another call. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, this is Barb in Decorah, Iowa. I'm calling about my 6-year-old dog, Ozzy. He's a dingo mix, and he has developed over about the last 3 years a real anxiety when he's in the car. It's primarily only at higher speeds. He's fine in town. He loves to go in the car, but if I'm out on the highway, the noise from the highway just makes him enormously stressful. He was fine as a younger dog. And then when he was about 2 years old, we moved to Iowa, and I don't know if you're familiar with these rumble strips that are in front of stop signs.
Sure.
The first few times we went over one of those, it scared him so much. He sits in the back seat, and he just started trembling.
Aww.
And he has since then has generalized the noise so that on the highways, there's just texture changes constantly on highways, and you don't really realize it until you have a dog that's just shaking and panting.
Mm.
And he will do that for as much as 9 or 10 hours.
Now, obviously, you're talking about 9, 10 hours. These are trips where you're traveling from A to B. Do you do this often?
No, but I've done it probably 8 times with him, and the first 5 times he was fine. It was only in after we moved here, and he started this thing with the nervousness.
And so how often do you need to do it in the future?
Not that often, but I probably will be going someplace in November that I want to take him, mm-hmm. and it is a 7-hour drive.
Okay. Well, you've tried a lot of good things, as I said before, and good for you. And the reason I was asking about frequency is because going further than you've gone, if you're going to try behavior modification, is going to take you a lot of time. I mean, mm-hmm. just, you know, I don't have a quick fix necessarily for you. So I'm not sure it's worth the investment of your time to try a sort of standard desensitizing, counter-conditioning behavior modification program. But mm-hmm. if it's something you do relatively rarely, you could certainly talk to your veterinarian about some kind of psychotropic drugs mm-hmm. that go beyond Dramamine. You know, Dramamine makes a lot of dogs just really sleepy. It helps with seasickness and car sickness, mm-hmm. just with dogs like it does with people. And usually that is why dogs are anxious about being in cars, but it sounds like this is very different. This relates to sound and texture and sort of the feel, and so that's different. So you could talk to your veterinarian or a veterinary behavior specialist would be even best about what kind of medication to use. It's a true anti-anxiety. You know, if it's going to say a 7-hour trip, you could talk to your veterinarian about would it be appropriate in this case to use one of the benzodiazepines, for example? That's Valium is one of those. And it's a sedative if used in, it depends on, it's dosage dependent. So at relatively high doses, it pretty much puts your dog to sleep. Mm-hmm. At lower doses, it's an anti-anxiety medication, and it actually changes the limbic system such that the animal tends to feel not just more relaxed, but even sort of happy.
Oh, that would be nice.
So that's never something you would consider if you're going to do it. Often,
okay.
But if it's, you know, once or twice a year, I would talk to your veterinarian about it. Yeah, I think that's an appropriate use of medication. And again, that's up to you and your veterinarian.
And good luck, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Patricia, thank you. It's been a great week.
Well, it has been great fun. We had great calls this week, didn't we?
We did, and we'll look forward to another great show next week. Patricia McConnell is a PhD certified applied animal behaviorist and adjunct associate professor of zoology at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, and she's here every week to give you practical advice about your pet's behavior. Calling All Pets is produced at Wisconsin Public Radio. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Our producer, Cynthia Schuster. Brad Kohlberg is our technical director. Leo Sidran composed our theme music. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, hoping you'll join us again next time for more Calling All Pets.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0901P. More pet tips and advice for training new dogs or leaving pets home alone are available online at callingallpets.org. Our website also features a complete list of past guests and online archives of the program. The website, once again, is callingallpets.org.
On the next Calling All Pets, we'll find out whether humans have the special ability to use echolocation and what we can learn from it if they can.
And we'll also welcome a guest to talk about how a horse's troubled past helped her cope with her own.
Tune in for that and more of your animal behavior questions on the next Calling All Pets.